SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
A new week kicks off right here, right now, live on a Monday afternoon. It is Football Full Circle. That is FFC, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. He is the mastermind of the pigskin. That is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. An hour together here to start off this new week on Football Full Circle to break down a ton that has happened in the past 48, 72 hours around the National Football League. We know Aaron Rodgers' deal to be the new quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Does it make financial sense, and does it move the needle for the Steelers entering 2025? That is our discussion here on Football Full Circle. Some other news for some now former Packers and, of course, other offseason acquisitions as the NFL really gets going in mandatory minicamps around the league this week. We'll talk some big college football and college athletic news as well throughout this hour on Football Full Circle. Easy guy, always a pleasure to be kicking it around with you.
Yeah, and as soon as we were off air, the Aaron Rodgers news broke over the weekend, right? And we talked about it throughout the offseason. That doesn't move the needle, and does it bring the Pittsburgh Steelers any closer to a potential AFC championship now that Aaron Rodgers potentially is the starter week number one? And that's the major question in terms of risk-reward for this team. They made some offseason moves. It looked like they had a dynamic duo in terms of the wide receiver position with George Pickens and DK Metcalf. They shipped Pickens to Dallas, and now there's unanswered questions. And again, you know, this is Mike Tomlin's legacy right now. We know about his consistency in terms of getting his team over 500 into the playoffs. But again, that's not good enough. You know, you're talking about a storied franchise, one that wants to win championships, and I don't know if Aaron Rodgers brings the Steelers any closer to that in 2025, Ben.
That's the question, Joe, and that's what we'll debate here throughout the start of this hour on Football Full Circle. Here is what we now know. Aaron Rodgers made it official on Saturday in Pittsburgh's facility, signing a one-year, $13.65 million deal, with $10 million of that guarantee, and he can make, based on team performance and individual incentives, north of $18 million. Of course, Joe, there was some kind of consideration. What would the deal be for Rodgers entering year 21 of his NFL career at the tender age of 41 years old? What would that one-year deal look like? Would he be having the leverage to say to Pittsburgh, you need me more than I need you. I'm going to be asking for $25 million. Not the case. $13.65 mil, which, Joe, feels very fair financially for Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers to hand out.
Yeah, I mean, again, you're talking about, you know, similar type of situation where Russell Wilson, and I know there's a difference of about $10 or $11 million, but they basically signed Russell Wilson on the cheap last year and got a competent quarterback for much of the regular season. But again, you're signing Aaron Rodgers not just to compete and get you to a 9-8, 10-7 overall record. You're supposed to challenge for an AFC championship. And again, that is where the weakness for Pittsburgh holds. Can Aaron Rodgers compete with the likes of Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson in the AFC North? Can he challenge the likes of Josh Allen and Pat Mahomes, should they be up against it in terms of an AFC or a divisional type of matchup? That is the question mark, and that's where you say, I don't know. This team looks the exact same that it did a couple of years ago with Mason Rudolph. And again, Aaron Rodgers has a better career than Mason Rudolph, but he's at the tail end of it. And the same expectations were on the New York Jets, and Aaron Rodgers couldn't deliver with a top 10 defense, and that's why he was shipped out. So again, we'll see how this plays out. Is he going to be a locker room guy too? Because again, if the locker room is all of a sudden broken up, that's on Mike Tomlin and nobody else, Ben.
Yeah, and Joe, again, we'll talk about where Aaron Rodgers is at this tail end of his career and what it means for Pittsburgh in just a matter of moments. Financially, in comparison to a couple of the other quarterback deals we have seen for vets this offseason, let's go to an old and wily vet, the guy who was in Pittsburgh last year, Russell Wilson. Signed a deal with the Giants, 1 year, $10.5 million guaranteed, that can get up close to $21 million based on those incentives. So the guaranteed money, 10.5 to Russ, $10 million to Aaron Rodgers, pretty equitable. How about Daniel Jones, who might now be the starter in Indianapolis, a 1 year, $14 million deal, the annual average value of $14 million for Danny Dimes, 13.65 for Aaron Rodgers. Again, pretty fair going rate for a 1 year deal for a veteran quarterback. Now, let's get to what it means for the Steelers. Does Aaron Rodgers move the needle? And move the needle, Joe, for Pittsburgh, in a place where under 18 years of Mike Tomlin's reign, the standard is the standard. It's not above 500. It's not winning football. It's not 10 plus wins any longer. It is taking that next step to be a true AFC and postseason contender. Does Aaron Rodgers move that needle? Does he change that outlook for the Steelers? I would say no. It sounds like, Joe, you sound the same.
Yeah, and again, let's use a similar type of situation which played out in Minnesota last year with Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold had one of the best regular seasons in terms of a Vikings quarterback, 36 touchdowns, right? He leads the team to a Week 17 matchup, Week 18 matchup against Detroit. He can't get it done. They go on the road on a neutral field, and they get kicked in the chops by the LA Rams. So again, as good of a regular season as Sam Darnold had last year, he couldn't get them to a playoff win. So Aaron Rodgers has major question marks if he's the same player that he was in terms of even his last season in terms of Green Bay. You can make the argument he's not. He's on the tail end of his career. And that's not what the Steeler fans signed up for. They signed up to compete for a championship. They couldn't get it done with Kenny Pickett. They couldn't get it done with Justin Fields and Russell Wilson. And they might potentially swing and miss now on Aaron Rodgers. And again, that is on Mike Tomlin solely for going this route and putting this team in this type of position.
So let's talk about where Aaron Rodgers is currently based on what the Steelers had in their QB room. Mason Rudolph and a sixth-round draft pick in Will Howard. Joe, I do not believe Aaron Rodgers is even solidly above average any longer where he is in his NFL career, about to enter year number 21. Is he better than Mason Rudolph? I'll give Aaron Rodgers that. And the Steelers have made the postseason four of the previous 5 years with rather mediocre or slightly above average quarterback play. But this is not MVP winner Aaron Rodgers. This version of Aaron Rodgers is who we will lay out right now. Last year, Joe. 3,897 passing yards, 3,897, 28 touchdowns, 11 INTs. The New York Jets won just 5 games despite Aaron Rodgers starting all 17. Last year, his completion percentage, 63%, the fourth lowest in his career. Aaron Rodgers, Joe, as we have shared, has played 20 years in the National Football League. 14 of those 20, he has started at least 15 games. In only 4 of those 14 years he has played at least 15 games, he has not made the Pro Bowl. His first full year as a starter with the Packers back in 2008, a rather down year 2 years later in 2010, his final season in Green Bay, 2022, and last year with the New York Jets, 2024. Those were also the only 4 seasons in Aaron Rodgers' NFL career that he threw at least 10 interceptions. Also, the only 3 years that he has thrown less than 3,900 passing yards. In 2 of those 3 years, his last 2 fully healthy years as a starting quarterback, 2022 in Green Bay, last season with the New York Jets. So the MVP caliber version of Aaron Rodgers, not there. The Pro Bowl version of Aaron Rodgers, not there. A mediocre quarterback, that is a slight improvement. Again, I'll give you that.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you have. In the 2 breakout games last year that padded the stats with the 5-touchdown performance over the Dolphins and the huge performance over Jacksonville after they were already eliminated.
Yeah, and so there is a consensus, Joe, that I believe that most people think Aaron Rodgers is a slight upgrade, but not really going to move the needle all that much. We'll talk about the market movement after Aaron Rodgers signed next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Can Aaron Rodgers lead the Pittsburgh Steelers to a winning record in 2025? Can Aaron Rodgers lead the Pittsburgh Steelers to a playoff berth in 2025? Heck, can Aaron Rodgers elevate the ceiling enough in the Steel City to make the Steelers an AFC contender? Those are our questions here on Football Full Circle. Joe Lisi, win total for Pittsburgh entering 2025, 8.5. The under has the juice. It's minus 135. Did that number change after the signing of Aaron Rodgers this weekend? No. Aaron Rodgers to lead the Pittsburgh Steelers to the postseason. Plus 148, minus 184 to the no. That means the odds makers think the Steelers are more than likely to miss the playoffs in 2025. Did that number change after the addition of Aaron Rodgers? No. The Pittsburgh Steelers to win the AFC Championship. 22-1 this upcoming season. Did that number really change outside of more than maybe a dollar here or there after the acquisition of Aaron Rodgers? No. So, Joe, I ask you, what does Aaron Rodgers change, if anything, for Pittsburgh this upcoming NFL season?
Nothing. I think it just changes, you know, having a veteran quarterback that Mike Tomlin could say is an upgrade from Mason Rudolph, and that's it. Again, they're hoping that this team could find enough breaks defensively and potentially just stay within games and within margin where they could pull games out, you know, potentially in the fourth quarter. But I keep going back to this and saying, let's look at the measuring stick for the dominant teams or the front-running teams in the AFC. Pat Mahomes, elite quarterback. Josh Allen, elite quarterback. Joe Burrow, elite quarterback. And obviously Lamar Jackson, a two-time MVP. Does Aaron Rodgers close the gap on any of those four teams? Absolutely not. So if you go up against those four teams, not just in the regular season, but in terms of a playoff atmosphere, especially on the road, you hope that your quarterback could pull the games out and obviously bring you an AFC championship. I think if we had a bet right now, we would put our money on all four of those teams outside the Pittsburgh Steelers. So again, that's what it comes down to when you bring in Aaron Rodgers. You bringing in a veteran like that, a Super Bowl winner, it's to bring you over the top. It's not to maintain the consistency that you had with Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph and any of the other garbage quarterbacks. Even Ben Roethlisberger at the end of his career, you knew they were plateaued out. They tapped out. They couldn't get over the hump. That's why they moved on, and Ben Roethlisberger went into retirement. So unless you could get higher than that ceiling, they're not going anywhere, Ben. And you certainly can't bet on them over the 8.5 or take a shot 22-1 because their defense isn't dominant either.
Yeah, Joe, you could have asked me well before the signing of Aaron Rodgers, even Mason Rudolph, heck, even some glimmer of hope out of Will Howard. Do I think the Pittsburgh Steelers would win at least 8 games? Yeah. Because you'd have to be an idiot to bet against that right now based on the 18-year sample size of Mike Tomlin. Of course, never fewer than 8 wins, never a losing record. And they have done so with a rotating cast and crew at the QB spot that is a who's who of mediocre quarterback play the last 4 seasons. Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, Mitchell Trubisky, Duck Hodges. Last year, even Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, who probably had the Steelers at a stage they did not expect to be come mid-December. And of course, we saw how the year ended out in 2024 for Pittsburgh. So, Joe, do I believe Aaron Rodgers can lead the Steelers over the win total of 8.5? Sure. Am I betting it? No. Would I be stunned if Pittsburgh went 10-7 and earned a wild card spot in the AFC? Maybe slightly surprised. Would I bet on it? No. But would I be stunned? No, I wouldn't be. But to me, that will not define success for the Steelers in 2025, for Aaron Rodgers and more than likely his lone year in the Steel City, nor for Mike Tomlin in year number 19, if he should even return to see a 20th to lead this Pittsburgh organization. You know what would be success in that next step now for the Steelers? Winning a playoff game for the first time since 2016. This is the Pittsburgh Steelers we are talking about, Joe. A team that has seen the postseason 4 of the previous 5 years with rather mediocre quarterback play and yet has not won a playoff game since 2016. That was the last season that Pittsburgh reached the AFC Championship. If Aaron Rodgers can change that narrative, tip of the cap, I was wrong. I just don't see that being the case, Joe, for Pittsburgh in 2025. And frankly, anything short of that, I think Steelers fans are going to be upset.
Yeah, and again, you're promised something, right? It's like, okay, Steeler fans are promised an above 500 record for the most part. That has been the consistency for Mike Tomlin. That's great. Okay, so we got to step one. Step two and step three are obviously an AFC championship and Super Bowl title. And when you look at it and you look at the sell job, in order for them to achieve that, you would say that Aaron Rodgers and the team as a whole need a magical run. They would need everything to fall into place. They would need to catch lightning in a bottle. They're certainly not doing it with the moves that they have put this team in a position entering the week number one of the 25 season and campaign. They haven't done that. And again, when you look at identity right now for Pittsburgh, you say, okay, the years that they won and challenged for AFC championships, they could run the football, they had a veteran quarterback, and they had a top 10 stellar defense. That is not the case anymore. Teams are ripping that secondary, and teams are abusing them on the ground through the air. So there's no guarantee that the Steelers, from a defensive perspective, are going to challenge the elite teams in the conference. And when you add in now Aaron Rodgers and his inconsistency, you're just spinning your wheels. You're stuck in neutral. That's why the number hasn't moved, Ben. If the books legitimately thought that they were closer to an AFC championship, we would have seen that number go down the way it did with the Jets number. We saw the Jets at like 20-1 when Aaron Rodgers signed. It was 9-1 and 10-1 respectively within a heartbeat. That hasn't happened.
The numbers for Aaron Rodgers, Joe, fascinating. 3,300.5, his season-long passing yards prop. It is a number. We talked about those 14 years for Aaron Rodgers. He has played at least 15 games. It is a number he has gone over every single time. I think he can go over that, but a Steelers quarterback has not thrown for more than 2,500 passing yards individually since Big Ben's final year in 2021, and that was a little bit more than 3,700. We will finish out our conversation on Pittsburgh next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it's FFC. That's the mastermind of the pigskin, Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. Lisi Guy, ultimately, if I had you bet a number on the Pittsburgh Steelers, you and I have both shared our thoughts on if, not really, Aaron Rodgers changes things this season in 2025 for Pittsburgh. So if you had to bet one of those prices, whether a good bet to improve or produce in a positive way or to miss out on something, playoffs under the win total of 8.5, what would your first bet be on the Steelers even after the addition of Aaron Rodgers?
I'm gonna do exactly what I did with the New York Jets, and this is like maybe an alt market, but I have a better feel that they would go under 6.5 wins at plus 220 than I would anything else. You know, when you look at obviously the negative minus money for them to miss the playoffs, I don't want to do that. But again, you know, the expectation is Aaron Rodgers is the savior, and that's the hope for Arthur Smith and Mike Tomlin and all the Steeler faithful. But it has a better shot of being exactly what we saw with the New York Jets, where it's Aaron Rodgers' way or no way. He's not a locker room guy. He disrupts the locker room, segregates it, and all of a sudden this team has a better shot of being 5-12 than they do of 10-7. And again, I know Mike Tomlin does it right, but with Aaron Rodgers in the mix and knowing that he's at the end of his career and he wants things a certain way, he has a better shot of being frustrated, tormenting everybody, I would go under the 6.5 wins at plus 220.
I think it's a really good look, Lisa guy, because in terms of finding value on Pittsburgh, either this thing is exactly what we have always seen under Mike Tomlin, 9-8, 10-7, maybe just maybe a playoff price, but you and I don't really believe in that, or it's a disaster, right? And it wasn't as though he led the New York Jets to the playoffs. That was it. No, the Jets have still missed out on the postseason 14 consecutive years. And Joe, it wasn't even like in his fully healthy year, they missed out, but they won their final three to get to 9-8. Oh, shucks. It was just a very difficult AFC. They were a 5-win football team. They were abysmal. 5-12. And Aaron Rodgers started all 17 games. In the defense up until they fired Robert Saleh and put Jeff Ulbrich in there, was a pretty darn solid unit that just really started to leak oil because the offense couldn't give you anything. And it wasn't Aaron Rodgers throwing for 2,600 yards. It was Aaron Rodgers flirting with 4K and 28 touchdowns, but with 11 interceptions. And yet, the New York Jets were still just a 5-12 football team. So, Joe, the bet I would make is actually laying the minus 184 for the Steelers to miss the playoffs, because there's a part of me that thinks they could go 9-8 with Aaron Rodgers, but I don't think that's good enough in the AFC that we expect for 2025 to be a playoff team. But I like that look, Lisa guy, where this could be fine. Aaron could play 14, 15 games, but they're just not a very good football team. So 6-11 makes a lot of sense with some plus money in that perspective, Joe. I do like it. And the one thing I will just say to the notion of what Lisi was alluding to, Aaron Rodgers comes to Florham Park. The idea for the Jets is playoffs, conference championship, or bust. It was a huge bust. But all of that is notoriety. All of that is attention. The one thing you could say for Mike Tomlin, he has been the controlling facet in this Steelers organization for basically the last 20 years. And especially after Big Ben, it's been Mike Tomlin. So even with the mediocre quarterback play, it's still Mike Tomlin. Does the focus change from Tomlin if things are bad to the enigma that is Aaron Rodgers? It's one thing when it's Duck Hodges or Mitch Trubisky or Mason Rudolph to be like, yeah, what did you expect us to do? It's another thing, even if his play is slightly above average and not the four-time MVP winner, when it is the individual and the name that is Aaron Rodgers. Joe, this could get really interesting if things go south early.
Yeah, and this is why I say potentially it could be Mike Tomlin's last season in Pittsburgh. Maybe. Because we talk about legacy, we talk about resume, and again, if things do go off the tracks and off the rails, the only person that's going to have to answer to it is Mike Tomlin, because again, this was his decision and he allowed this situation to play out. And again, you remember last year, Woody Johnson wanted to get rid of Aaron Rodgers after the third week. And then after Aaron Rodgers throws three picks in London against Minnesota, instead of getting rid of Aaron Rodgers, they get rid of Robert Saleh. Complete joke.
It is. And we'll see what happens this year in Pittsburgh, a franchise that has not often changed head coaches ever, but certainly in the last 55 to 60 years. We'll talk about other Green Bay Packers and some former Packers and some other NFL news that was brought to us to start off this new week on FFC up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stephens.
More NFL news to start off this week here on Football Full Circle. Joe, early on this Monday morning, we got pretty shocking news, I guess, out of Green Bay, but it seemed as though the writing was on the wall. The relationship between Packers, the Packers front office, and former All-Pro cornerback in Jaire Alexander had basically come to a close. The Packers making it official after 7 years with Jaire Alexander as their star quarterback. That has come to an end. The Packers releasing Jaire Alexander on this Monday morning, Joe, after 7 years with Green Bay.
Yeah, he was definitely a problem in the locker room. Even though he's a great cover corner, he looked like he was checked out for much of the second half of the regular season. And again, they had a business decision to make. It's not the first time that Jair Alexander has been a problem within the locker room. At times has been vocal and says he wants out of Green Bay, and it's unfortunate. But again, you have a decision to make. If you're Matt LaFleur and you're a team that's looking to compete for an NFC championship, even though when Jair Alexander's in the secondary, you're an elite cover corner, you need to be playing for 17 games and you can't miss the playoffs. I mean, again, that's a cause of concern. It's almost like a similar situation at the end of his career with Antonio Brown in Tampa Bay. You don't know if he's just going to go off the rails and not be a part of the team, and you can't have that. So we'll see what transpires in terms of teams maybe stepping up to take a shot on Jair Alexander, but certainly his days in Green Bay are done.
When you look at Jair Alexander right now, Lisa guy, again, he was a first-round pick back in 2018. He is only 28 years old. He turns 29 next February, right? So you would still think he's got some tread on the tires. The last 2 years, though, for the Packers, Alexander only played a total of 14 games. A lot of that was injuries, but there was some weird kind of stuff where he wasn't very happy with the team in the front office this past season. In 2024, again, his last fully healthy year, the last time he played double-digit games was back in 2022. He was a second-team All-Pro selection and a Pro Bowler at the cornerback spot. He was a difference maker, that being Jair Alexander for Green Bay. But where things stand now, maybe not the biggest wrinkle for the Pack entering 2025. So he is released. We'll see where his future goes from here in the National Football League. I expect him to sign somewhere this offseason if he really is a needle mover. Beyond that, that remains to be seen. For the Packers, though, Joe, it frees up a significant amount of cap space, around $17 million after his release for Green Bay moving forward this year. Now, it's a little bit late in the offseason to get that big splash. It obviously gives them financial flexibility moving forward. Matt Schneidman, who covers the Green Bay Packers for The Athletic, I saw a tweet of his earlier today. He does a great job, of course, as the beat reporter for this team at Lambeau. And basically, after we kind of got some of the cap clearing numbers for Green Bay, just posted a photo of Trey Hendrickson, that maybe the Packers now would be more interested in trading for Trey Hendrickson and would have some of that financial freedom to give Hendrickson the extension he so desires and, of course, should deserve from the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, I mean, if Green Bay were to go after Hendrickson, it definitely makes sense then, right? You know, you think about the front seven, you think about, you know, the teams that they have to compete against, obviously Minnesota, Detroit, and Caleb Williams with Chicago in the division. And big picture, you want to challenge Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles. To have Hendrickson coming off the edge definitely benefits your defense. And I would think that number, if they were to get him in terms of Green Bay, that would definitely significantly change their playoff odds or potentially Super Bowl odds. So that might be a way to go. Again, you get rid of your lockdown corner, you know, guy that's disgruntled, you throw more money at Hendrickson and we'll see. But, you know, obviously now with Hendrickson being dangled by multiple teams, it's up to the Cincinnati Bengals. It doesn't look like they're making a full-fledged effort to get this guy signed. So it's unfortunate. Does it affect Cincinnati like it would affect a contender, like I mentioned Green Bay? I still believe no, Ben. Again, that defense was atrocious with Hendrickson there. They can only go up, in my opinion.
Lisa guy, last year, I think it's pretty fair to say you were optimistic on the Packers, right? Green Bay will enter the NFC in the NFC championship race this offseason. With some moving odds, by the way, on the 49ers getting some buyback in the marketplace with that fifth best number alongside the Commanders. So tied for fifth best alongside Washington, both Green Bay and Washington at 10-1. Last week, the 49ers were 11-1 behind both the Packers and the Commanders. They have now leapfrogged both of those organizations plus 950, still a half buck behind the Rams, the Eagles, the favorites at plus 380, and the Lions at a 5-1. Price, what is your view this year, Joe, on Green Bay to truly be that conference contender after getting ousted in the opening round of the playoffs this season ago?
Well, I was high on Jordan Love, right? And obviously the injuries to Jordan Love started week one with the loss to the Eagles really affected, I think, their consistency. But when you look at the two games against Detroit, The one in Lambeau, they got abused, and the one in Ford Field, they couldn't pull out that three-point loss against Jared Goff and the crew. That is the measuring stick right now. Can they close the gap on Detroit in the division? I think they can, but the problem is, and you saw it in terms of the loss to the Philadelphia Eagles, they do not have an answer in terms of will they trail and come from behind when Josh Jacobs is contained, right? When Philadelphia contained that rushing attack, we didn't see the consistency in the passing game from Jordan Love. I need to see that this year. Again, I still think they could hit stride, but I'm not as high on them. I still think they're a 10-11 win football team, but I thought I saw more at the end of the season 2 years ago when they knocked off Dak Prescott and they had Aaron Jones running wild than I did last year when they got the addition of Josh Jacobs. Too heavy when it came to Josh Jacobs in critical times, and I need to see more balance out of LaFleur this year before I buy in.
Of course, there was some hope that they would add in the wide receiver room. They draft Matthew Golden with their first-round pick for the draft that was in the parking lots of Lambeau Field. The first time the Packers have drafted a wide receiver in the first round since pre-Aaron Rodgers. That dates back to 2005. Will that be enough? Will that increase the play of Jordan Love? Josh Jacobs back for another year. A defense that was good to start under Jeff Hafley, but then kind of regressed toward the tail end of a season ago. Joe, there's a lot of people looking at the Packers as that true contender to the Detroit Lions in the NFC North at plus 270, second best price on the pack. I'm a little bit more skeptical. How about some other NFL news we expect to become official today? Nick Chubb is set to sign with the Houston Texans. Of course, Chubb, who was wildly successful in Cleveland, has had two pretty significant injuries end his last two seasons. Early in 2023, a gruesome and devastating knee injury that he came back from last season, but only played 8 games for the Browns before his season came to a close early as well. He has decided to sign with the Houston Texans, pending that physical, Joe, that he is ready to go.
Yeah, and to, you know, benefit Joe Mixon as a change of pace, thunder and lightning in regards to that could be used in short yardage and goal line situations, much bigger than Joe Mixon in terms of that situation. I think he benefits the Houston Texans. You're getting him on the cheap. He's a gamer. He's a blue-collar type of guy. You know, in terms of locker room and workout, you know, Nick Chubb is legit. So, again, not bad. Not a bad sign. Does it bring the Houston Texans any closer to potentially an AFC championship? No, that hinges on the receivers, right? Can Nico Collins and can that group stay healthy? And can the offensive line hold up to protect C.J. Stroud? That is the main concern entering this season. We'll see if they can do it. Again, I think they can win the division, but I still think they're a step behind Baltimore and Kansas City entering the year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Plus 110 for the Texans as the favorites to win their third consecutive AFC South crown. Questions around C.J. Stroud, who has not thrown yet this offseason, and voluntary OTAs either. It's a fine move for Houston. Sadly, I think Nick Chubb has dealt with a lot from an injury perspective. More on FFC up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. There was another watershed moment in collegiate athletics late on Friday night that, of course, we detail for you here on Football Full Circle. Basically, each of the previous 3-4 off seasons, there has been a watershed moment that should change the future of college sports forever. This one, Joe, a big one, because for the first time ever, athletic departments and actual college and universities can directly pay their college athletes for the first time in history. Judge Claudia Wilkin finally approved the settlement and the deal between the NCAA, its most powerful conferences, and lawyers representing all D1 athletes. The House versus NCAA settlement has finally been approved. We were waiting for it to officially be approved. A lot of it had to deal with roster limits, that Claudia Wilkins went back and said basically to the NCAA and its main conferences, you have to figure out how to deal with. And Joe, the crux of the story is this. For the first time in the history of college sports, colleges and universities, the schools can directly pay players. NIL has basically been that. This is the legalized system of pay for play for the first time ever.
Yeah, so no longer student athletes, right? I mean, right. Yeah, employees, right? This will be interesting to see how it transpires over the course of a regular season, knowing that obviously schools can pay players directly and what the repercussions are as the regular season plays out, because now this changes everything. It's no longer NIL coming from a booster or a conglomerate, you know, type of entity. It's coming directly from the school, which can dictate exactly everything that they want as it relates to these players. And again, they're no longer student athletes, because throw their scholarship money out the window, they're getting paid directly to play their respective sports. So again, you know, this is interesting. This definitely changes the landscape of college football and college basketball. Those are the two biggest ones. We know that. And again, some schools, again, this will just, you know what this does? This just pulls away the top 20 or 25 schools from the rest of the pack, because we know Alabama and Georgia and Ohio State and Penn State and all the big ones are going to get their money coming from everywhere. And the group of five and the smaller schools are going to be left holding the bag. And some schools and organizations might not even be able to field a team because they can't keep up to the pay that's going up at the top 50 schools in the country.
And that's a very fair point, Joe. Again, from the financial perspective, here is what the settlement now approves. The NCAA will pay nearly $2.8 billion. That's billion with a B, $2.8 billion in back damages over the next decade to athletes who competed collegiately at any time from 2016 through present day. And then how does it impact what we are going to see presently and moving forward? Starting for this academic year of 2025-26 that comes our way, Joe, at the end of August and certainly coincides with the start of the 2025 college football season, it puts in a cap. An annual salary cap, if you will, of $20.5 million per school. That is at the D1 level. But there are, of course, varying athletic department endowments in money and financial flexibility at the biggest of the big guns, in the Big Two of the Power Four, and our other FBS conferences throughout Division I collegiate athletics. Of course, most of that share of $20.5 million is going to go to college football first and foremost, then men's college basketball, women's college basketball, so on and so forth. They have already figured out the structure of how that will trickle down, but it will vary within athletic department from school to school, even within the same conferences, Joe, let alone around the nation, conference to conference. Theoretically, the optimistic glass half full perspective is that this Wild West climate of name, image, and likeness basically being pay for play and NIL collectives being able to pay $4 million for insert X athlete with zero guardrails or repercussions out there, that comes to a close. Why? Because as a part of the House settlement, Deloitte, one of the big four, will act as an enforcement arm, Joe, of an NIL clearinghouse. So all of these NIL deals will have to go through NIL Go. That is the name of the clearinghouse, of course, to be approved. And if they are not, they can be disciplinary and punish NIL collectives through these athletic departments. That is the supposed benefit, Joe. That instead of NIL collectives and their own privatized money, the direct payment is coming through schools. Now, that's all well and good. That is the optimistic view. As we have seen, though, when the NCAA tries to challenge something in court, they've been getting smacked around. So the first time an NIL collective feels as though it's being unfairly disciplined by Deloitte in this NIL clearinghouse, We probably go back to court, making some of that discipline that we expect to stand the test of time kind of fly out the window.
Yeah, and again, I'll tell you what, academics, if they are tied to any of these deals, that's it. There is no, like, arbitrary type of decision. Once they could say you don't have a recommended 85 in a class or a B average, you're not playing. You lose out on the money, you lose out on everything, and there's no, that's it. It's an enforcement coming from the employer that all of a sudden can ruin everything. So again, you know, the players need to understand now this is different. This isn't, you know, Chip Kelly or not Chip Kelly, but, you know, Brian Kelly or another coach, you know, Kalen DeBoer saying, hey, guess what? You can't play. This is coming down from your employer that's directly paying you now. That's a different landscape that these players have to get used to.
Right. Are there any contractual obligations? Not necessarily. We still don't have those standard agreements in place. There's not exactly a negotiated CBA either between the athletes and these universities. It is just direct payment to players from the schools themselves for the first time. Further ramifications come your way next on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
How will the historic NCAA versus House settlement directly impact college athletics starting right away in 2025-26? It's the academic school year that is about to begin in just about 2.5 months. It's a $20.5 million cap. Basically a salary cap for every athletic department at the Division I level, certainly in those FBS conferences, to pay out directly to their athletes for the first time ever in the history of college sports. Joe, I would say optimistically, I am hoping that it does hinder some of this Wild West environment that has seen zero guardrails, regulations, or restrictions in the NIL era that began about four summers ago on July 1st, 2021. What I am a little bit pessimistic about is, one, it doesn't actually, despite the Deloitte clearinghouse and being that enforcement and disciplinary arm to any of these NIL deals. And secondly, I think we have issue with how NIL has been instituted and how it has played out over our very eyes, becoming this Wild West that makes even free agency look like a lame and simple thing. But I think the idea of NIL is fun. Players benefiting and being able to profit off the billion-dollar industry that is college sports, and namely college football. And the idea being that through NIL collectives, if you have a bunch of rich donors and alums at different schools around the country, like we've seen with BYU or Texas Tech or various others, they can invest in their program, in their alma mater, in their athletic department that they love the most, to try to even out the playing surface with the bigger schools, like in Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Ohio State, USC, so on and so forth. We got some players going to different schools for the first time instead of the likes of Texas, Alabama, and Georgia winning the recruiting rankings battle each and every year. If the House settlement does in fact work the way that we expect, that it levels out the playing field once again, and those additional NIL payments are found to be illegal or impermissible through the NIL clearinghouse, then we kind of just look back at the big guns starting to dominate the field once again in college sports.
Yeah, and again, you're starting to see even like hedge funds and private equity getting involved in college athletics. And that, you know, here we go again. You know, when you talk about the financial repercussions, and obviously certain schools can generate it, and you might have one or two donors, or let's say, you know, former alumni from North Texas or some of the, you know, Charlotte, but it's not going to be consistent, Ben. And again, you know, when you talk about private equity being involved, it has to obviously reap the rewards in regards to revenue and generating revenue. And that's where, when you look at the big picture, there's only a certain amount of teams that can generate that type of revenue. Teams like Alabama, Ohio State. Why? Because they have 100,000 plus stadiums, and they have the TV rights deal, and they have the local businesses that want to buy into the product because it is a bang for the buck. You're not going to get that at the smaller schools consistently, and you're not going to close the gap. You might have one donor, at North Texas or some of the smaller ones that could do it. But let's be honest, you get a star player at a group of five. What is that? How does that move the needle when you have a 50,000 seat stadium? Okay, you're only going to garner X amount. At Alabama and some of these other schools that are competing for college football playoff slots each and every year, there's a bigger piece of the pie, and that's where you start to separate the top maybe 40 schools from the other 95 or 100, and that's the difference that they have to get ahead of right now.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Joe. And to your point about private equity, a firm called Elevate is already trying to talk and get agreements in place with conferences and athletic departments. What?
CEO is Guido, I think. Al Guido, isn't he?
Oh, I don't know. You would know better than me from your financial background there in the day. But, Lisi, people might ask, why are we getting private equity involved in college sports? And I think it is a very, very fair comment. But now that these schools, each and every year, at least to start, have a $20.5 million cap, some of the smaller schools, even in the bigger conferences, are going to need that influx of cash to make sure they can shell out the money necessary to compete at the highest level of college sports, which becomes a very dangerous game, of course, in collegiate athletics. He's Joe Lisi. I'm Ben Stevens. Football Full Circle returns tomorrow on Sports Grid Radio, noon Eastern time.